On Thursday, the ICAO announced that it reached a historic agreement between governments, industry, and civil society representatives. What is the ICAO and what's this agreement?
So ICAO, it's the UN agency which regulates aviation. And for 20 years, it's been discussing how to address aviation's climate impact. And that's an important discussion because aviation has a huge climate impact, about equal to that of Germany. And its emissions are growing far faster than any other sector of the economy. So it was essential that they took some action to address aviation's emissions, and that process began this week.
So, are you happy with the outcome?
No, I'm happy that 191 countries got together and agreed to take some action to address aviation emissions. But the deal itself, both what it proposes to do and its level of ambition, falls far short of what is possible and also what is needed.
And why? Why is that?
Well, two reasons. Its target is very weak. It will permit the aviation industry to grow unchecked for another 5 years. And then afterwards, it will only offset emission growths above 2020 level. So to put that in simple terms, when you take a flight, that flight will still spew out a lot of greenhouse gases, a lot of CO2, but airline operators will purchase an offset, an emissions reduction in another sector to compensate for part of that flight. So this discussion this week wasn't about capping or even cutting aviation emissions, which is what we need. Instead, it was about compensating for a very small share of aviation emissions.
Why is offsetting compensating not good enough?
It may have been good enough perhaps 15 or 20 years ago, but if you look at what was agreed in Paris last year, in the Paris Agreement, that agreement was about limiting a global temperature increase to 1.5 or 2 degrees, which is essential if we're to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. And to do that, we need all sectors of the economy to peak their emissions and decline rapidly. It's not enough just for one sector to pass the buck on to another or ask another sector to do more. Everyone needs to cap and then reduce their emissions.
The idea with offsets is that I think that an increase or an amount of emissions which normally are expected to have happened do not happen then, and that compensates for the, in this case, for the airplane emissions.
Yeah, I mean
So,
to put it in very
yeah.
in layman's terms, it's like instead of you going on a diet, you pay somebody else to go on a diet.
Yeah.
And that's a fine theory, except we're at such a stage in climate change where everyone needs to cut back.
Because there's two issues here. One is that it's not enough, which is the point I think you're making. And the other thing is that even if it would be enough, if the global emissions wouldn't increase, and if that would be enough, sometimes it doesn't happen. The offsets are not really offsetting.
Exactly. There's a very checkered history with offsetting. And Europe's actually one of the world's largest purchasers of offsets and has been doing so since shortly after the Kyoto Protocol. And 2 years ago, Europe kind of looked at its record of buying offsets and realized it's actually a very tricky system to make work. And in its 2030 climate policy, it's decided to get rid of offsetting. It's just too problematic to be absolutely certain that when you pay somebody or a sector to reduce their emissions, that either they wouldn't have reduced the emissions without you paying them, or that those emissions will actually be reduced. And to give one very concrete example that's very relevant to this discussion, there's a lot of talk around forestry credits. So airlines will buy forestry credits, but to kind of
So
delve down into what.
that means planting trees, right? To put it simply.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's two problems there. How do you know that those trees wouldn't have been planted in the first place? That's the one problem. How do you know when those trees are planted that they'll actually stay planted for their lifetime to compensate for CO2's 100, 200 year impact on the climate? The same for paying people not to cut down trees. How do you know they were actually planning to cut them down? It's a hugely complicated policy area to make work properly, and that's why when it comes to climate change, if there are two options, one is burning kerosene and then compensating for it, or just not burning kerosene at all. The preference always has to be for not burning kerosene.
Okay, I'll go back to that second option, but the first option, I mean, they have agreed now not to choose for the second option and go for the first. So have the rules for offsetting been clearly laid out and defined and agreed?
Nope, not at all. And that's why we and a lot of other NGOs were very critical of this deal this week, because it's an offsetting deal, but it's an offsetting deal without offsetting rules. And that's extremely worrying because, you know, we're seeing a lot of attention this week for the deal, but in the next year or two, we have to work out very, very strict rules to make sure that offsetting works as well as it can. And we need to make sure that those rules are very robust and are very transparent. And there's a lot of work still to be done.
Now, the other thing is the timeline. I think you mentioned that it will only start in 5 years or so. Could you explain that a little bit more?
Yep. So the target is to stabilize emissions at 2020 levels. So for the growth over 2020, airlines will start compensating for that. That leaves a gap of ambition for 4 or 5 years now. And that's, you know, really quite essential, because going back to what we're trying to achieve under the Paris Agreement, we don't really have 4 or 5 years to wait for action. We need those emissions to peak urgently and then start declining. And, you know, already we're seeing an average temperature increase of about 1.2, 1.3 degrees. That's very close to the Paris target of 1.5. So it's a lot. There's a lot of problems with the deal this week, ranging from the use of offsets to the delay in action.
Another point is that it mentions the basis being voluntary. Is mm-hmm. that correct? Because it sounds like a speed limit on a voluntary basis.
Yeah, it was proved very difficult at ICAO, at the ICAO, to make this a mandatory system, because in general, it's hard to get agreement between 191 countries. So what they agreed to do was to make it voluntary. So states will volunteer to join, and they can also volunteer to opt out again with very short notice, which introduces a significant level of uncertainty into this deal.
So it's only naming and shaming that is the is what will put pressure on the countries.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm mentioning countries, but is it something that countries decide, or is the airliners?
The basis of the deal is a deal between countries. So when a country opts in, all the flights from that country to every other country which has opted in will be included.
Mm-hmm. Europe has established or has incorporated part of aviation, the emissions, the CO2 emissions from airplanes, in its emission trading scheme, which covers the industry, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But it went back partly because the Chinese and the Americans mainly did not agree. And I think it's only flights within Europe that are covered at the moment. Is that correct?
Yeah. That's correct. So Brussels, Rome is included, and Brussels, New York is not included. And that was a significant rollback in the ambition of the scheme. But even if it's just Brussels, Rome that's included at the moment, that's still one of the few measures which is in place globally to limit aviation's climate impact. And also, there's a significant difference between Europe's emissions trading scheme and what was agreed this week, because Europe's emissions trading scheme, it isn't about compensating. It's about capping and then reducing over time, which makes it a far more robust scheme than what ICAO has produced this week.
Trading scheme of Europe, is that... Are all the emissions mixed with the other with the industrial emissions, or is it a separate trading scheme?
There's a slight tweak with a separate aviation cap, but to give you a very direct answer, yes, it's a lot of sectors which are in one scheme. So a lot of what's known as kind of large emitters, such as the power sector, steel sector, and now the aviation sector, and they're all in one cap that decreases.
Yeah.
By just under 2% every year. So it's about kind of sharing within one part of the economy the overall effort to reduce emissions.
Yeah. It hasn't worked very well because there were too many free emission permits given, right?
That's it, the free permits, and also there was just too many permits issued. Mm-hmm. And there's what's known as a huge surplus of allowances, and that's because we've actually managed to reduce emissions quicker, and also the economic crisis from 8 years ago played a role. So what needs to happen in Europe is Europe needs to keep this ETS in place, because it's fundamentally a better scheme than what ICAO produces. But also, we shouldn't forget Europe needs to fix its own ETS and make it as robust as possible.
My understanding was, correct me if I'm wrong, that Europe agreed to have an ICAO agreement, or and not to implement the inclusion of the total aviation industry in its ETS, on condition that the ICAO would come up with something good. Is that correct?
That's about it. Yeah, the European decision makers, including the European Parliament, will have to decide over the next 6 months what to do in response to this IKO deal. And already a number of influential MEPs have spoken up and said what's been produced by IKO falls well short of what is required. And I think after many years of discussion in IKO, the focus now turns to what Europe is going to do. Because Europe has always sold itself as a climate leader, and Europe has a very large aviation sector. And I think what Europe now needs to do is, yes, say to IKO, this is a starting point, but now move forward with its own more ambitious measures here in Europe. And that includes fixing its own ETS measure, but it also includes other policies such as ending the fuel tax exemption that the aviation sector currently enjoys.
And what about the including the overseas flights?
Well, I think there's a significant chance of that happening because the IKO deal won't kick in until 2021, and there certainly is scope for Europe to continue to include international flights or to reintroduce international flights into its emissions trading scheme at least until 2021. Mm-hmm. That would be a very important way of boosting what's known in climate talk as pre-2020 ambition. And pre-2020 ambition is all about making sure you make immediate cuts so that the Paris Agreement can be achieved.
Mm-hmm. I want to end with the, what's the alternative other than limiting air travel? Because the way to go, right, is not, according to transport and environment, is not having a scheme like the one agreed on Thursday and having very good rules. So what should happen? Should we not fly just, or is there an alternative?
No, I think what we need to do is we need to look at, when it comes to climate policy, what are the most effective policies we can put into place? And offsetting is generally considered the least effective policy. So what we should do is we should go look at what does work in climate policies. And what does work, and if you look at other transport modes or other big emitters, is something like much more stringent efficiency standards. It's issues like fuel taxation. Those are things that haven't been on the table to date because the aviation industry has lobbied very successfully to be given the weakest form of climate measures. And I think the evidence is pretty clear that this isn't going to work to reduce its climate impact. So we need to go back to the drawing board and look at those policies that do work. Mm-hmm. And those in Europe, such as MEPs and ambitious member states, need to push for those policies here at a European level.
This sounds like putting a higher price on aviation fuels and the CO2 emissions that causes. I have some figures which are not totally up to date, saying that the CO2 emissions in 2005 were about 0.7 billion tons, that they were expected to increase to 1.2 by 2030 and to 2.2 by 2050. While they should go down instead of increasing, they should go about 2.5 or something by 2050 or less. Mm-hmm. So there's a big gap of 1.5 to 2 billion tons of excess CO2 that's going to be emitted by the aviation industry, by better technology and more fuel efficient planes, and by better, more efficient airplane routing management. You would only be able to close that gap by 25%, so maybe 500 million of the 2 billion you have to save. So then the point was, what about biofuels? Because some people say, well, biofuels are bad, but there's maybe no other alternative in aviation.
Yeah, I mean that's a very common argument, and it's right to criticize biofuels. Some of them can be quite terrible. For example, palm oil. And Europe has not a very good record in the use of biofuels. It has a mandate for biofuel use in the road transport sector. And because there wasn't strict enough rules there, we actually found that it increased emissions rather than decreased them. For the aviation sector, I mean, the problem with the aviation sector is it's not very easy to decarbonize it. There's no Tesla.
That's the point. For the road transportation, we have buses on the one hand, and of course, electricity provided it's CO2 neutrally or produced, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think, so what we need to do in the aviation sector is not just think there's one silver bullet, like offsetting or like alternative fuels. I think we need to pursue absolutely everything. And that includes, you know, investing in new technology, but also technology standards. I think biofuels have a limited role to play, so long as they're what's known as, you know, third generation biofuels, that they're the most sustainable types of biofuels. And I think we need to make sure aviation makes its fair contribution, because there is an element of fairness to this. Because if you're the kind of person who maybe goes on holidays to France by train, you're subjected in some ways to much more stringent climate regulation than someone who may fly to Milan for the weekend. And, we really have to ask, is every sector and everyone contributing fairly? And I think looking at the aviation sector to date, the answer is very clearly no.
Yeah, which causes aviation to be cheaper than taking the train, actually, at the moment, right?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, Europe is the home of Ryanair's €9.99 flights. I mean, these are artificially low prices. It's not just that aviation is exempt from climate policies. It also receives a lot of tax breaks, a lot of subsidies, a lot of special treatment. And it makes it harder for individuals really to be green because there's these distortions in how we fund our economy.
Some airlines are already with technology companies are investigating third generation biofuels. So transport and environment is not necessarily against that, or do you think that's a waste of money?
I think we're cautious about it. We're cautious for a very good reason, because the aviation sector has been very good at saying, the technology solution is just around the corner. You don't need to worry about us. And sometimes these policies are they're not very realistic. So we're critical of alternative biofuels, and with good reason. But it may have some small role to play down the line, limiting at least aviation's climate impact.
Okay.